Thanks for coming today. Excellent. Got it. Get that out of my way. All right. So I think let's just go ahead. This is just a snapshot of our agenda. As far as roll call, if you would like to, feel free to put your name in the chat. And if you're from a town or organization, you can just kind of add that. But do also want to ask if there's anybody who maybe this is your first time attending and you'd like to unmute and introduce yourself and say hi. You are also more than welcome to do that as well. So I will pause there. No one knew. Going once, going twice. And then just to make sure, is there anybody from Krog that's maybe new that this is maybe your first time attending? I've lost track, honestly. We've got some new
Well,
hires
as
in
a
the
cry,
chat and
I
fun.
haven't attended in a long time. I think it's been a couple of years since
Oh
I've.
yeah, Roger, you don't yeah. Well, thank you for coming. Well, excited to hear your roundabout presentation. And then yeah, Sonia.
Hi everyone. I'm Sonia. I'm new at Krog, and this is my first time attending this committee. I'm the new environmental planner, and I'm excited to just tune in and learn more.
Thank you. All right. Anybody else from Krog or elsewhere? And with that, we'll move on to public comment. And sort of, I say this every time, public comment sort of assumes that we're a pretty formal group, and we're really not. We're pretty informal. So, and public is just, anybody at one point or anyone at any point, if you want to say something, now is a dedicated moment for you, but also encourage, discussion or comments or questions at any point during the meeting. So, with that said, is there anybody at this point now that would like to make any sort of comments? Going once, going twice. All right. Next item on the agenda is approval of our minutes. And really, if you just had a chance to review them, if there were any edits or corrections that we needed to make, you can go ahead and let us know. But otherwise, if there's nothing there, hi Norm. Welcome. If there's nothing else to add to the minutes, then I would entertain a motion to approve them from anybody who would like to make that motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes, Patrice Carson.
Okay, great. And do I have a second? Jason, I think I saw you, and it looks like you're unmuted, but I couldn't hear you. But I'm gonna take that as a second. Yeah, it's not working. Okay. Jason is indicating that he is seconding. All right, all those in favor, say aye.
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 And then anyone opposed or abstaining might be a shorter list. So if you have any of those, please let us know. And hearing none, I will go ahead and say that the minutes are approved. All right, next item. So just really quickly covering some general updates and news from CROG, and starting off with the Capital Region East Coast Greenway study. So I've been working very closely with Mike and our consultant team, which is FHI and VHB, and they're doing a fantastic job. It's a lot of work. But since the last time we met, Since the last time we met, yeah, I think we reported that Simsbury had unanimously endorsed our study recommendations at their Board of Selectmen meeting. We have since finalized our study documents, and our final study is now posted online. And we put forth a resolution, and it was unanimously endorsed by both CROG Transportation Committee as well as our policy board. So Simsbury is in good shape. We expect hopefully that they'll be going for some grant funding in the very near future to move that along into design. There's still some questions related to environment and proximity to private properties, especially that I think they'll really be able to get into an answer in the next phase. So excited for that for them. As far as Bloomfield is concerned, we actually spent some time revising and tweaking some of the routing maps that we had done sort of early on in the process. And along with that, we were redoing some of their the scoring that they had done with their scoring criteria, sort of based on just information and kind of diving into it a little bit more for some better scores. So, or more accurate scores, I should say, not necessarily better, but more accurate, we feel. So our next steps with them, I think we're actually looking to get on their agenda for a special meeting of their trails committee, which will then endorse, I think they're at the point now where they've got to go from their shortlist to their preferred. So they're going to be, the trails committee will be making an endorsement to town council, and then we'll be hoping to get a formal endorsement from their council on what their preferred alignment is going to be in Simsbury, some of which hinges on Hartford. We want to make sure that, you know, Bloomfield and Hartfield trails touch at the municipal boundaries, right? And we have spent a good amount of our efforts in the last, I want to say, 3 solid months, 3 to 4 months, really, working on a Griffin Line feasibility study. We couldn't in good faith sort of move them on to their shortlist process without answering some questions there. So a really fantastic report has been developed by FHI. You know, it's a small task, if you will, in the overall study process, but it's like an 80-page report. So it's very detailed, very thorough, and looking forward to sharing that with DOT and the city before we sort of share it out with the larger group, and including the TAC. And then East Hartford, we are prepared at this point. We know what their preferred alignment is. And we also received the benefits analysis from the sub-e consult, which just was shedding some light on, you know, the economic benefits over the Silver Lane corridor versus the Southerly corridor that were initially shortlisted. And in a nutshell, it found that there's slightly higher economic benefit opportunity on Silver Lane. So I think that's it for updates. We probably have a tech coming up shortly, and are going to be looking to do more community engagement. I think early spring probably on that, and likely wrapping up. It was anticipated, I think, originally April, but the Griffin feasibility study has pushed us out a little bit. So June feels more likely, and that's a little bit to be determined still. Next slide. All right, Mike, did you want to take this one?
So recently we just got notified from DOT that they sent out a survey to kind of gauge interest from towns and municipalities and whatnot, to kind of better understand what you guys are looking for in terms of a micro grant program. So in the chat, I'm going to send a link to that survey itself. This isn't an application for the funds itself. This is just a survey to kind of gauge what you guys are interested in doing. So for understanding, municipalities, schools, school districts, and nonprofits are eligible.
Your volume slide cut out. Oh, and now you're back.
Sorry. What did you guys hear?
The eligible entities.
Okay. That's kind of all I said then. So I think we're good. All right. So the next slide kind of shows some of the expenses that are eligible for that. So maintenance stations for bikes, helmets, safety classes, training classes, and possibly even traffic gardens. I can put a link in the chat for Caitlin, kind of found that was kind of interesting. Do you want to touch on that, or do you want me to just do it real quick, Caitlin?
You can go ahead and do it real quick. This was not listed, okay, I don't think, in their survey, but I think it might fall in line with some of the other, with the spirit of the rest of the item. So I think we included it, and you can give a little more background.
Yeah, so my understanding of the traffic garden itself is, you know, so if a school has a stretch of pavement that isn't being used, they can kind of design like a small little city roadway for kids to kind of be able to use and make their way through, and kind of just understand, like, you know, what stop, what yield, you know, different ways to kind of go on the road. We thought this might be interesting for that fourth grade teaching class for the kids. And so that's kind of just a little visual on the left, and then on the bottom, right in the middle, that's kind of what it looks like, you know, on the ground. So I have this link for you as well, just to kind of, there's a better website that can kind of explain it more than I can. So I'll throw that in the chat. So there you go. Next up. All right, we have our bike ped priority plan. So initially we kind of presented this to you guys back in December. So it took back a lot of feedback and comments from you. made the necessary updates to the scope itself. The scope is currently being reviewed just before it goes over to DOT along with the RFQ. So we're hoping to get a consultant on board this spring, hopefully maybe April or so. I think this group meets again in May. So hopefully by that time we'll have a consultant on board and get this moving. Next up, we have our 2024 LOTSIP solicitation. Submissions are due by next Wednesday, the 21st at 2 o'clock. So just kind of give you guys a heads up, you have a little bit more than a week or so. And from my understanding, talking with Satoria, it's a $1.2 million cap on bike and sidewalk only projects. But if you do have any questions, any additional questions, feel free to reach out to me or Satoria. We can kind of answer those for you. Next Wednesday at 2 o'clock, those submissions are due. All right, so this is our other. I'll take a stab at the 24 walk audits. So we kind of started going through discussing with towns and scheduling walk audits for this coming year. So if you are interested, obviously there's more than enough time to schedule something with us. If you are interested, spring, summer, fall for walk audits around your town. If you have any new projects that you want to kind of want to check out, we're happy to kind of go out with you and take a look at your individual projects.
All right, and I'll go ahead and take the raised planning grant. Just wanted to let folks know that for those of you who are familiar with the Berlin Turnpike, runs through the communities of Wethersfield, Newington, and Berlin, and then kind of extends north and south from there as well. But those are sort of the primary communities, and it's been on Crog's radar for a while. And just to let everybody know that we decided that we are going to be applying as the lead entity for a raised planning grant to look specifically at traffic calming and improving it for all users, but definitely taking a close look at how we can add bike and pedestrian infrastructure along the turnpike because there's none there. They now have ped push buttons and crosswalks, but there's no connections in between. So that is something very exciting that we're looking to do. Our CROG policy board approved a resolution that is going to allow us to apply for a planning grant totaling, we think, $2.5 million for this effort. So fingers crossed, but I think it's a very positive thing, and we're working very collaboratively with those three towns, and they're all contributing a cost share. So really positive beginning, and hopefully we get the grant. Fingers crossed, like I said. That's all I have on that.
Thank you. So I did put the lots of solicitation link in this website as well. So now jumping to a presentation by Mr. Roger Cron and myself, working on our roundabout feasibility study. I'll put the link to that as well. Lots of links today, so have fun. I'll kind of give a brief overview of what roundabouts are, what they aren't, and some kind of misconceptions that people might have towards them. And then kind of go over some of the examples that we have throughout the region. And then at that point, I'm going to turn it over to Roger to kind of go over some of the safety benefits and kind of really getting into the numbers and going through the screening methodology itself. So a couple of years ago, Roger and I kind of started looking at locations which would benefit most from conversion to a standard intersection to a modern single-lane roundabout. One thing to kind of consider, depending on traffic numbers, right of way, building impacts, et cetera. Roundabouts kind of come in all different shapes and sizes, from single lane to multi-lane to hybrid to mini, and then other examples such as peanut roundabouts. But for this study itself, we really looked at the single lane modern roundabout. And actually, this was a picture of Granby, the new one up there, that Ryan Faulkner from our office kind of took with his drone. So thank you, Ryan. All right, so runabout some stoves. They were developed in the UK in the 1960s. They became more popular on mainland Europe over in the 80s, most notably in France. Eventually in 1990, they came here with the first one in the planning community over west of Las Vegas called Summerlin. So really, the benefits of roundabouts, include the ability to operate in both urban and rural settings. So it should fit all of our communities. They handle heavy traffic extremely well in a safe and efficient manner. And their versatility with regards to shape, size, and design is pretty impressive. And this picture is of Hebron Ave in Glastonbury, as you can see. So this one up here, this is a WATSA project that's currently in design on New Britain Ave, Waite Street, and Chandler Street in Hartford. The roundabout here is going to be used for traffic calming, improve safety and walkability, and reducing congestion. Obviously, this in turn has environmental and community benefits in terms of reducing the amount of idling. And hard accelerations, as you don't have to accelerate kind of going through a roundabout as you would at a stoplight or stop sign. So these next three slides, you're going to see examples of what roundabouts are not. So this first one is a traffic calming circle, which is much smaller than a roundabout, and generally used to replace stop signs at four-way intersections. These are typically kind of used in residential neighborhoods to slow and reduce accidents. They're great, but they're not a roundabout. Next, we got traffic circles. This one is Pulaski Circle over in Hartford. These are larger than roundabouts. Speeds very rarely exceed 30 miles an hour, although I'm sure Pulaski people go faster than that. But they have low capacity levels and are pretty inefficient. And primarily, they're used for aesthetic reasons with parks or green space in the middle. So that's also not a roundabout. Our third is rotaries. So rotaries, they're much larger than the roundabouts with higher speeds. Generally speaking, roundabouts, you travel in at 25 miles an hour. Rotaries, you can travel in excess of 40. It's not nearly as pedestrian friendly as a roundabout might be. Originally, these were designed back in the 1940s. So again, not a roundabout. So jumping over to what a roundabout is. So this is the new one that we kind of showed up in Granby. So some characteristics, we kind of talked. The deflection angle kind of coming into a roundabout really helps reduce speed. So great for pedestrians. As you see, the crosswalks are kind of separated from the actual roundabout itself to give both people and drivers better vision and safer crossing. As you'll see as well, we have the raised splitter islands, which help because pedestrians only have to look one way while they get to the splitter, and then as they get there, they can look the other way. Let's see. Also in the middle, you'll see like the raised truck island. It's intended to have the back of the trailer roll over that, not the actual cab over the trailer, which should be running on the actual pavement on the roundabout itself. But that gives truck drivers a little bit more space to work with. And although there is usually a higher initial setup cost, there's usually less equipment to kind of maintain and replace compared to traffic signals. And with regards to traffic signals, if there ever is a power loss, the roundabout still works just as good as when there is power. And driving home yesterday, got off at the Buckland exit on 84, and those lights were flashing, and it was a complete mess. So I'll just throw that out there. Next, we got how to use a single lane roundabout. So you'll first, as you get into, going back to that last visual, you first get into the crosswalk for the pedestrians. So you look out for bikes and pedestrians, and as you pass that, your focus kind of shifts to the left as you enter the roundabout. So you're really only focusing on one thing at one time, which makes it easier as a driver. And one thing to remember that I think a lot of people kind of forget is that the incoming car always yields to the person who's already in the roundabout. And then once you're in there, you just kind of exit your desired turn. So yeah, watch out for bikes and peds, and then yield upon entry. So it's fairly simple. This last one that I have is kind of showing from DOT all the planned and the built roundabouts throughout the state. And this is from last September, so it's pretty recent. And then, as you can see, Roger will probably touch on later, we're doing a little bit better at Connecticut versus national in terms of reducing severe crashes and overall crashes as a state compared to the nation as a whole. I do have a presentation or a quick video. I think I have to unshare and then share again because I forgot to click a button. So bear with me just a second. Let me know when you guys can see that. Good.
Yep, we can hear. We can't hear it though.
Can't hear it.
It can seem kind of foreign to a lot of Utah drivers. I mean, in Utah, you might have stop signs or stop lights or, I don't know, yield signs or no signs at all. But check this out. We've had roundabouts in Utah for over 30 years. There's hundreds of these strange, not so strange, intersections all over the state. And they can go on a variety of roads. One lane, two lane, roads from 25 to 65 miles per hour. And they work surprisingly well in Utah, especially where safety's concerned. Here's why. On any road, you can imagine the paths that cars might take, and anywhere these paths touch, you get a conflict point, a potential crash. A four-way intersection has 32 conflict points. And the worst kind of conflicts, the T-bone and head-on crashes, they're all crammed right in the middle. Roundabouts avoid these severe conflict points by going around them. And when we imagine the roundabout paths, there we go, we get 8 conflict points, from 32 down to 8. And since none of these conflict points are the super bad kind, even if there is a crash, it's a rear end or side to side crash, the less severe kind. In fact, a study of non-roundabouts that were later converted to roundabouts found that fatal and serious crashes were reduced by as much as 88%. And they're surprisingly simple to drive. Slow down, yield to vehicles already in the roundabout, and go when there's an opening. And this is where the genius of a roundabout really shines through. You see, when we choose locations for roundabouts, we're looking for a moderate amount of traffic that's using all connecting roads, which gives us a roundabout where exiting vehicles create openings for other drivers in all directions. Watch for it next time you're at a roundabout. A car exits, which lets another car enter, and that car eventually exits on and on. It's like a perpetual motion machine that's super efficient at moving cars safely. And that safety extends to pedestrians as well. Cars are already going slower, and they're yielding in both directions to pedestrians, which they should be doing everywhere, by the way. And we also have these raised islands at the entry to most roundabouts, which allow pedestrians to cross one direction at a time. First watching for exiting vehicles to yield, and then for entering vehicles to yield. If you're on a bicycle, you have two options at a roundabout. Follow pedestrian or bicycle paths beside the road. This is recommended for most people. Or advanced riders might choose to stay on the road. Just keep in mind that roundabouts don't really have shoulders because of the constant entering and exiting. So if you are on the road, occupy the entire lane like a car. And that's it. Fewer conflict points and slower speeds make roundabouts an efficient, safe, and not-so-strange option for cars, bikes, and pedestrians at Utah intersections. Another example of how UDOT keeps Utah moving safely.
All right, so thank you to Utah DOT for presenting that better than I did. So I'm going to...
Roundabouts can seem...
Stop. So I'm going to go and send over to Roger. Roger, take it away.
All right. Hi, everybody. Thanks, Mike. So at CROG, we undertook a roundabout screening study as part of our program of planning studies with CONDOT. And we had VHB as our consultant that helped us out with this. And so on our next slide, Mike, we had a screening process that we developed to look at basically all the intersections in our region that had a functional classification as a collector on at least one leg, I believe it was. And we used crashes, volume, and right-of-way. And we came up with a methodology, a screening methodology. So the first criteria was crashes. And what we did was we were heavy on the GIS applications. It's quite an amazing tool to allow you to screen over 8,000 locations in our region. And we took a diameter of 250 feet. And within that diameter around the center of the intersection, those are the crashes, the number of crashes that we took over a three years of data. And then we weighted those using the conventional, the K is a fatality, the A is the most serious injury type accident, a B is a minor injury, a C is a potential injury, and a zero is a property damage only. And then that's a kind of a conventional weighting factor that FHWA and is used kind of throughout the country. And then on the next slide, as Mike said, our emphasis was on really identifying locations that are good for reducing crashes with our study. So certainly there are a lot of locations where there are operational aspects that a roundabout would work really well just to help the flow of traffic, where you have multiple legs that are coming in at odd angles. And that's another good reason to have roundabouts. We didn't really try to hone in on that. I think those kind of rise up to the top more naturally by our town engineers and all of the planning and engineering staff that know those and operations folks throughout our region, and people know of those problems. But we were really focusing on the safety crash reduction benefit. The nationwide statistics, as on the left there, 82% if you have a stop-controlled intersection and convert it to a roundabout, and if you have a signalized intersection and you convert it to a single-lane roundabout, about 78%. Those are kind of some nationwide well-respected numbers that have been out for years by Federal Highway Administration. And then the conflicts, as you saw in that neat little video, I think that's a real good quick video of the overview of roundabouts. The conflict points are reduced from those 32 different conflict points to a conventional four-leg intersection to only 8 with a roundabout. So that's one of the many factors why they're so safe. And then on the next slide, the traffic number. So across the top, you have the crashes, the volume in the yellow there. So with single lane roundabouts, the current design guide is this on that bullet down below. It says NCHRP 672. That's the Highway Research Program document name 672, where what we've been using for probably the last, I don't know what the date is, over 10 years for roundabout planning and design. There's just this year, a new one came out. Not a lot of changes, but some modifications to some aspects of roundabout planning and design. But as far as volumes go, generally, if there's 17, in the table there, you see a 17,000. average daily traffic range. So if you're under 17,000 average daily traffic, you're kind of really good to go, that it's well suited for a roundabout. We were even a little more conservative than that. And what we did was, if we were at 10,000 or below with the average daily traffic, we gave it a factor of, 100. And then we gradually, if it was like in the 15,000 range, for example, you see a 0.25. And that we applied this 0.25 factor onto the crash waiting score. And so that was our volume factor, as we called it. And that was the second criteria. And then the third criteria was right of way. And if you move on to the next slide there, Mike, then the right of way aspects. So we used a roundabout circle of 120 feet. So that's kind of a general number, not exactly the curb, not the inscribed diameter is what you'd kind of call where the curb might be, but you also need the sidewalk and that area. So we use the 120 foot diameter as a general number to look at potential right of way aspects. On this diagram here, you see the black circle is the circle that we used 250 diameter radius to determine the number of crashes in the intersection area as we defined it. The orange circle is the 120 foot diameter for the right of way impacts, and that's basically what would be typically need to design into the space you need for the roundabout itself. So in that in this picture here, you see, well, on the top right quadrant, you see an impact to a building. And the other quadrants will not that much. Well, in the top left, there's an impact to a building there. So then what we did on the next slide, we came up with a kind of a factor of if we had a right-of-way impact kind of scoring system where we would, using GIS, we measured the square foot of impact beyond the existing right-of-way and measured that and had a base of like 2,000, and then the building impact of 200, and we would measure the square foot of any building impact, and we total the impacts up, sum them, if in the underneath the total right-of-way and impact factor line, it says sum the actuals for that location divided by 2,200. And locations where there were no right-of-way, we used a factor of one. If that number was less, some number that came in less than one that we would plot, that would be the factor. If the sum was over the 2,200, then it became a negative number and the location was eliminated because of a major right-of-way impact. Because you couldn't have a project. You certainly could. But we wanted to kind of, this is just a screening process. And we wanted to just come up with a good solid list of locations that were kind of rock solid, like good locations for further consideration, taking these major factors of our goal of crash reduction. It has to meet the volume criteria as a basic traffic operations aspect. And the right of way, you know that if you have major right of way impacts, it's not going to suit that well to cost, public acceptance of the project and that sort of thing. So that was our score. And then we applied this process to all 8,000 intersections. And then the next slide we have, this is kind of just the running through those numbers where we'd have the crash score with these the different crash types. For example, here at this Newington Avenue and John Donne Drive in New Britain, there were 20 crashes. There were 11 property damage only crashes, 2 type C, 7 type B injury, and 0 A and 0 fatalities. On step one, we crunch through that weighting factor and get a number of 33.3. Then on this particular location, the average daily traffic was 13,000, so that we reduced that by a factor of 0.75. And then the right-of-way factor, because that impact I showed on that other slide where we impacted that building, So that resulted in a factor of 0.5. So we took the 33 weight for the crashes, multiplied it by the 0.75, multiplied it by the 0.5, and came up with a score of 12.5. And then on the next slide, then after we did that ranking, we also did a desktop review. So Will Britnell was on our team from VHB. He worked at DOT and really started developing roundabouts in earnest for the department years ago. Has a lot of experience, so he'd look at the Google mapping and look at just different constructability issues, utilities, topography. If it's too steep, you don't want roundabouts where you have the roadway approaches are real steep. If there's cultural historic resources here, you have on the corner of that one met East Windsor, you're close to a town green area where you have some memorials and that sort of thing. So he'd look at do the desktop review of all the locations that were ranked high. So the top 100 overall locations, he did this more detailed review of. And then on the next one, we have kind of our top ranked location. So this is our GIS mapping. And we had 48 of the top 100 were in Hartford, 10 New Britain, 7 West Hartford, and then 35 in other towns, which is not surprising because we had the focus was again on the number of crashes. We were aiming to reduce crashes. Our urbanized areas where you have a lot more traffic and a lot more activity are more prone to more crashes. So then next slide, we have kind of just a detailed using GIS, you can zoom in a little more, and Mike is going to give us a little demo on that, I think, in a minute. And on the next slide, we have a chart, and we do have these on our CROG website now. These are the top locations. And so basically, the rank is in the left corner. That score that we use to develop the rank is in the second column. The municipality is listed there. The roads are listed. The total crashes over the 3-year period are listed. And then you have this total KABC crashes. Those are the type of the type of the severity of the injury crashes. And then the average daily traffic number is there that we used. And then the right-of-way issues were reviewed, and we gave it a recommendation. So at the bottom, at the end of this, the yellow ones are the recommended ones, and the white, even though they're like the second one listed there, Hartford location was not recommended. It says the comment was the volumes because the volume where it was an issue with the volume. I don't know what, right now I'm looking at that one. It looks like it's kind of small. It looks like 9,000, which is not exceptionally high. So I'd have to look a little more detail at the comment. In general, the ones that were not recommended were generally because of right-of-way issues. And then we realized, I think on the next slide, we realized, okay, those are the urban areas where it has the most crashes, but we want to help all of our towns identify some good locations so that we took the top three ranked using this ranking criteria for each town. And we also put those on the map. So then we have at least the top three, each town can look at the top three based on this methodology for that popped up for their town. And I think with that, and this is then we put that in the same of just a table format, so you can easily each the top three in each town is listed in a table with the basic information. And then with that, Mike, if we have a little we have some GIS tool that we're going to make available, and I'll let Mike kind of take it from there.
Give me one second.
So we're in the process kind of finalizing a written report. We have a little of some pieces of it up on our website. And we're in the process of just kind of getting the final document that's to be published, reviewed, and then get that loaded up. But Mike has the data on the website.
So here's the DirectGS online map that we work with VHB to kind of develop. So as you kind of get in, it's got a splash screen. Just kind of you got to read through that and then click through it. So this is good because it kind of shows all our ranks, you know, 1 through 100, 101 through 200, then 201 through 300, as well as the town top three. So whether you know you're in a rural town or a big city, you can kind of use this to kind of get some information. So some of the kind of functions that you can do over here, this is just the preset. These are all the ones that are on. If you go over to layers, and as Roger said, we'll make this should be available this week, so we can send this out to the group. But if you want to see just the town top three, you can kind of click all those off. Just a heads up, if something is in a top 1 to 100, it might overlap with a town top three, and the hierarchy is going to default to the 1 to 100. So you might just have to kind of click some stuff off if you want. So I'm seeing Patrice right now, so I'll just kind of click on one of her intersections. So if you kind of go in, it'll give you what the ADT is. It'll give you the total number of crashes for that 3 year period. It'll tell you kind of the functional classification for the main road, the side road, where it is. So kind of information like that. There's a bunch of, you can change the base map, if you want to put like an aerial image on here, you're able to do that as well. Kind of get a better idea of, what's actually out in the field. You can, there's some interesting drawing tools if you want to print anything. You can, draw circles, squares, lines, whatever. There's some ruler, and then there's some other search features. So if you want to search for the 10th, nope, that's not it. Sorry. I'll take a look into that, but I think if we can get something to search for the number 10 or for Bolton, maybe Bolton will come up. So they'll kind of come up for those. Does anyone have any general questions for the roundabouts or for the tool itself, kind of before we get that out at the end of the week? All right.
I will ask a question, Mike, just because you used me as an example there on that particular one.
I shouldn't have done that, huh? I shouldn't have done that.
No, that's okay. I will be brief. That road coming in, traveling to the left, which I guess would be west, it's coming in at like a 40 mile an hour, and that's a stoplight. So you did take into account like speed, right? So if you're coming into that as a roundabout and not a traffic light, it would actually slow the traffic down as well.
Yeah, correct. So we have like the deflections in there for the roundabouts to kind of reduce the speed as you kind of enter. So yeah, as you, I mean, and even coming, westbound to eastbound, like you're saying, come off 384, obviously people fly on that. So they're gonna have to reduce speeds to kind of go through the roundabout as well. Hopefully making, the eastern part of, Route 44 a little bit safer for you guys too.
Yep. Yeah, that kind of surprised me a little bit when we pulled up on it, Patrice. That would be a little bit, if the volumes and the geometry work, just that, the eastbound move from 384, it would be a little tough to just make sure we keep the traffic slowed down, because as we all know, that's kind of a high speed type of area. One other design aspect kind of associated with roundabouts often is that in the center area, it's good to have some nice, either well lit, so at night you see the center of it, or some visuals, some kind of a relatively low plantings or something like that to get a visual effect, so that you see as especially in a higher speed location or rural location, so that vehicles would, see that there's a center island there and not blow through it. In general, for us in Connecticut, it's probably not as important. Some of the parts of the country where they're put on more high-speed locations, it's a little more important. But for us, maybe the illumination would be more important.
I have a question, Mike.
Hey, Gordon.
Do the all towns don't have three locations, correct? I didn't see.
Every
You could.
town should have three locations. It might have just been in the top 300, which is why it might have been
Okay.
covered up.
Okay.
So you do have three locations,
Okay. I
you know,
didn't
kind of
see it
down here, and then
on the it's hard to see at the scale I'm looking at. So thank you.
I have
Anybody
a
else?
oh,
Yeah, give
I have a
us, go ahead.
question about the layers. So on the rankings, I know you had mentioned that just because it's ranked high doesn't necessarily mean that it's recommended. And when you clicked on a point and kind of scrolled through, I didn't see whether it said recommended, yes, no. Does that mean we can assume that the top 100 has already been, ranked and all of the non-recommended ones have been pulled out? Or do we have to, follow up with one of the spreadsheets to figure out if it's recommended or not recommended?
That's a good question, Grace. How do we have that in
So
the
ours,
recommend if you put do the pull down? I forgot.
yeah, so I think we took it out just based on we didn't want to be the people who told you yes or no that you could build a roundabout there or not. So I think that's one of the reasons why it
Yeah.
wasn't kind of included in the tool.
Right, that's right, Mike. Our thinking was, well, to our point that it doesn't mean it's a bad location, and I think
Right.
some towns might want to proceed with something. So we were a little leery about kind of saying, oh, this is not recommended. It is in our, yeah, in our written report, and I think we have those lists on the website now, but it's something that we could certainly add. Maybe we
Yeah,
could
and
have.
Grace, if you have questions on a particular location, Grace, we can just, you can give me a call or something. We can kind of go through.
Understood. Thank you.
Other questions from anybody? Stop sharing again, and we will to what's new in my town. Give me one second. Right, so do we have any volunteers? Does anyone have anything new going on at all? Or you don't have to, but let me throw it out there.
I'll start again if you want.
Sure. Thank you, Patrice.
We've been working on, well, I'll backtrack a bit. Some time ago, the Route 6 properties that never happened were given back to the towns for trail purposes. And the town of Bolton and Coventry put together a Nathan Hale Greenway plan. And we had specified areas for parking along the trail so that you'd be able to park your car, get on the trail, do some hiking, and then get back to your car at some point. We've run into some issues with some of the parking areas, so we've been looking for a alternate spots. The first spot we looked at was actually a DOT staging area when they did some work on Route 6 a long time ago. But we found that for the general public getting in and out of that area, that the sight lines just were too dangerous to be using that for the public to be getting in and out. So we have been looking at some alternate areas, and we came across an area on South Road that would be at we could add parking along the street, and we have come up against quite a bit of opposition to it. And I do understand the opposition. Apparently, in the past, there's been areas where South Road's kind of a very rural, not densely populated area. So people come in and they park in those areas and they do bad things. And when you don't have 24/7 police force, it gets a little hard. So trying to figure out a way to maybe help the situation or somehow police it. They don't want the areas lit up You can't really, if it's along the street, you can't really gate it off at night. Just trying to see if anybody else has run into that, and what kind of situation or resolutions have maybe you come to. And it's generally there's like three or four neighbors that this would affect. It's right near their places. They all have kids. They're all concerned about their kids and safety and what have you. So I understand it. I live next to a park, and we fought with the town to get a gate. And the end result is we do have a gate. And the reason we have a gate is because I'm the one that goes over and unlocks it and locks it. And I'm willing to do that if it keeps people out. And ever since that's happened, it's been a lot better, but this is not something we can do in this particular area.
What about cameras?
You probably could. I have found they'd have to be hidden and not known about, and I'm not sure where you would send the video to. Would it be something where it's kept in the town security, and then if you had to look at it, you go back to the tape? That kind of thing? Or is it something the police won't do that? Like, we can't hook it up to the state police station. We did try to put a camera lawn in the open space here, again, in my personal town space here, and that got shot out. So they see it and they find it, and that's it.
Yeah, we can take a look into that, Patrice, and see if there's anything that we can find for you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Other than that, all other trail work is going well.
Yeah, in general, the camera idea. I mean, other municipalities that some, I think, they advertise the camera presence and that it's being monitored, right, with a big sign, but you don't have the police department to do that, right?
Right. It would have to be something where it's taped, like we have a camera on the town hall. So if something happened at night, you'd have to go back to the day before's tape and try and find what happened. And it's activated by motion. So it doesn't tape, everything. It just tapes motion. So you could do something like that. And, then if there was an issue, you could go back for it. But then you'd still have to take some action. It's hard. It's a very difficult balance. And I know that from personal experience.
All right, well, thank you, Patrice.
Thanks.
Anybody else?
Hi, Nathaniel from the town of Canton. There's three things I could share. So first off, we have a group of community volunteers. So they're looking to, they're pursuing grants in order to put in a bike pump track and learning skills facility at a currently undeveloped site in town. There's been thoughts about turning it into a park before, but they're taking the initiative to see if they can get the grants to go forward, putting the plans together, design money, all that. The second thing is we have another group of volunteers which are interested in installing a traffic garden somewhere in town. So we're looking for examples in other Connecticut communities of where those may exist. And finally, we are in the design phase for extending our currently existing trail to the border of Simsbury and Avon.
Daniel.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I'm sorry. What was the second one? A traffic what now?
A traffic garden, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just found out about that earlier this week or whenever it was. And that's the, I think there's a link now in the chat too. Yep. Very cool.
Yeah, I just found out about them recently myself. I think it's a pretty interesting idea.
The micro grant project that they had taken some surveys on recently, that might be something that could qualify for one of those projects. I want to keep an eye on that.
Jason? Any other volunteers?
Well, you can go.
Go ahead, Martha, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I wanted to know, well, we didn't do a permanent traffic calming, by the way, Grace from Hartford. We have done pop-up traffic calming demonstration events where we've actually looked at other traffic calming, gardens and use that to create pop-up versions that we use during our Domingo Open Streets event. So we've been able to kind of introduce temporary versions of those. And if you'd like, feel free to, you know, reach out to us if you want to learn a little bit more about what we did. I'll throw our email into the chat. But more broadly, I know our principal planner couldn't join us here today, but he had some trail updates that he wanted to share just as it relates to South Branch Park River. Still working with the state on moving forward, making progress on things such as the maintenance side of things. For Riverwalk North, that's a project that's going to connect the boathouse to the Windsor side of things. That's currently undergoing additional environmental activities. The Heartline, I know that there had been a brief update earlier about the East Coast Greenway and then the potential for the Griffin Line slash the Heartline to be an option. The city's keeping an eye on that because we're using that to inform our own efforts. And we're also going to be continuing to work to get a partner agreement with iQuilt, local nonprofit here, so that we can continue the work on that project. Riverlink, the bridge, the bike pedestrian bridge that connects the Riverfront Park with the other side of the highway, we're also working on and are going to be receiving some ARPA funds for that particular project.
Awesome. Thank you, Grace. Martha, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'll just piggyback on because it's connecting to a lot of the things that Grace is talking about. We're so excited. We're having our second community workshop for the new park that we're developing on the river in the northeast section of Hartford and Wilson section of Windsor. And this is a connection to the trail system Grace mentioned that comes out of the Riverside Boathouse, Mark Fuji Riverwalk that will go north and connect to Windsor. And so that's part of this project. And then the 76-acre park we're developing. So we're looking for folks to weigh in. So if you'd like to join us on May 2nd, it's at the West Indian Social Club on Main Street in Hartford. There's going to be a presentation by our landscape architects and then breakout groups to give specific feedback on three different schemes that potential design schemes they're looking at. So we'd love to have people weigh in.
Martha, appreciate it. Jason, you have your hand up before? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been having some microphone problems. You guys hear me okay? Okay, good. Thanks. So I have a lots of sidewalk project that's been sitting on our back burner since 2020 that we're trying to finally get out to bid, hopefully this spring. I've got a public involvement meeting on that project this upcoming Thursday, where we'll meet with some of the residents that could be affected by the project and those that are interested. It's a small, you know, 1,600-foot sidewalk gap that we're filling in along State Highway, which is Route 160 in Rocky Hill. We're also starting in with analyzing streets, using complete streets policies as part of our project planning skill set. And so I would love if any towns or any CROG staffs had any success with like a toolkit or checklist that we might be able to piggyback off of. And then also if we have any possible grant opportunities for some of the infrastructure associated with that. We've had some questions about bike racks recently, and I'd love to get some feedback about some possible funding sources for some bike racks. Any thoughts?
I wonder if Caitlin can answer that better than I can.
I was going to say maybe the micro grant, possibly. I wonder, I'm also curious if, I wonder if the micro grant is also sort of focused on like safe routes to school. So I don't know if they're going to have like ideas on where they want bike racks, but that might be a possibility. We at one point were offering bike racks through our CDC efforts, but that has since wrapped up. So I don't know off the top of my head what other sources might be, but I would not be surprised if there are some.
Yeah, I was thinking AARP, but I'm not going to have time to get approval from the town council for this most recent round of grants from them. So it's looking for other alternatives. Thank you.
Think of others.
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, that's it, unless somebody has any sort of a checklist they might be able to recommend for analyzing a street for complete streets analysis. I'd love to get a copy of something that people have used in the past that they're happy with.
I know like ARP has like the walk audit checklist.
I was going to say also seen... ours. Yeah, right.
Yeah, ours too.
I'll take a look.
I can send both of those to you if you want, Jason.
Fantastic. I'll put my email in the chat. Okay.
I got a couple things from Mansfield, if it's okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Mom.
We had a public hearing on our draft bicycle pedestrian plan that's been in the work for quite a while. And there were a lot of interesting new ideas, and we're meeting this Wednesday to see if we can tweak the plan a little bit to be current. We're also still working on getting our fourth grade education program going. It's now scheduled for the day, for the week after Memorial Day. And we're in the process of starting a cycling without age chapter in Mansfield. There are already chapters in West Hartford and Manchester and Stonington. So that's proceeding. We're hoping to roll that out this spring.
Moscow Sopelon, thank you.
This is Amy. I have a few updates for Watch For Me.
Yeah, go ahead, Amy.
All right, thanks. We're in the final stages of hiring our new staff person. They should be in place and working actively at the beginning of March. So if any towns have any need for any kind of outreach in their community, whether you have an event coming up you want support for, you want to set up an activity, a tabling event, a crosswalk activity, or you want to do a walk audit. So anyone that's interested can just email me, because we will have more boots on the ground for doing some community outreach and education. And that's all ages too. We do everything from little kids up to talking to folks in senior centers and things like that. Also, we are very close to being able to launch our new campaign. A little bit of it has already come out. It's called Ghost Shoes, and it's along the ghost bike lines of drawing attention to pedestrian deaths. And that's going to include a little mini documentary that people will be able to share, as well as some graphics and things that people can share. And just reminding everybody that we're always here. If you have a need for specific messaging in your community around anything, we're happy to work with you on that with our designers and give you those social media tiles and things like that. Thanks.
Thank you, Amy. CJ, go ahead.
I want to echo what Amy just said. You know, I leaned on Amy a little bit to do a trail crossing brief for us, little trifold brochure, and she's going to work on some social media stuff that we're going to use, incorporate for a new trail that we did, or Stanley Loop Trail. So thank you, Amy. Other than that, we're Beeline Trail. We have three phases, all in design. And it looks like we're going to be in construction for our first phase this summer. So it's pretty cool. The Beeline the Trail, if everybody knows, it goes from downtown CT Fast Track, downtown station and trail, multi-use trail, all the way to the Plainville Town Line, and which will connect to the East Coast Greenway. So it's pretty cool. It's exciting for us. We did not receive silver status from the Mute League of American Cyclists. Unfortunately, we maintained our bronze. We got notified a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if it's public info yet, but to everybody here. So we're kind of disappointed on that. The work we've been doing, we didn't get recognized at the higher level, but we did maintain our bronze status. So that's okay. Bike New Britain is scheduling education classes for the upcoming year. And they're also working with the schools, the middle schools, to develop an education program in the school system. So it's a breakthrough for us, because there's been so much resistance on the school side trying to crack in there, and they're open to it now, sort of building a curriculum. So it's pretty cool. That's it for us, though.
All right, there you go. Thank you, CJ. Anybody else at all? And Jason, I'll follow up with you in a couple minutes. I'll give you those audits. Let's see. All right, so we'll move on to other business. I don't have anything other business. Does anyone have any interest in topics they want to kind of bring up for future meetings at all? Or if you do, you'll have to do it today. Just you can shoot us a quick email and let us know if something comes up in the next 2-3 months.
Mike, the DOT survey that you started out with in the beginning of this meeting, is there a way to find that online?
Yeah, I don't know if the link for that worked. I think you sent it, but I don't think it's time for that.
I'm not good at the link through the chat. I'd rather just either go find it on your guys' website or DOT's website, if you want to send a link out by email, that'd be good too.
We can get that out to you.
Awesome.
Just echoing what Mike said on topics. If there's anything you are more interested in learning something about, that either we can potentially kind of take a bit of a dive into for you or find somebody with the knowledge and bring them to the next meeting. The sooner we find out, the better, just so that we can, have sometimes up to 3 months needed to find people and get them here. So any topics, or also if you have a project or something like that that you would like to present on and spend more time with, that you think would be scalable or replicable for other communities, we would love to hear that as well, and we could give you guys some time. So anything along those lines, ideas, throw them in the chat, or also you can email Mike after the meeting. That'd be excellent.
I'll have you guys, let me try for that link again. I think I just put in the words without the actual link. but besides that, I think our next meeting is going to be, Tuesday, May 14th at 12? Bear with me. Sorry. All right, let me know if that works better.
Perfect.
So, if any questions, feel free to reach out to either Caitlin or I. And then, any new topics down in May or presenters, just let us know. So, and then I think we can kind of adjourn for today. And thank you guys very much for coming on a snowy day. Enjoy shoveling or snowballing, whatever you're going to do. We're studying. So thank you guys very much for coming. Appreciate it.
Forward to that.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, guys.